Hello and welcome to GoGo Radio, found exclusively on GoGo.com. My name is David Chung, and in this show we're going to discuss security in the Oracle Service Bus. Be sure to check out my GoGo profile, and please send any questions or comments using the box below. All right, let's get started. In this show, we're going to discuss security in Oracle Service Bus. We're going to look at the various aspects of security. We are going to discuss broadly security in two categories, transport security and message security. We're going to look at Oracle's Service Bus's role as an active and passive intermediary. We're going to talk about service accounts and security assertion markup language, or SAML. So, aspects of security. I want to start by saying that security is a multifaceted thing. It's fine-grained. And security is typically broken down into a variety of different categories, 4, 5, or 6, depending on which author you prefer. And those are, first, authentication, who the user is, authorization, what the user is allowed to do, encryption, making sure that no one else can view the data, data integrity, making sure that the data is not modified, and finally auditing and non-repudiation. That is, keeping track of what the user's done in a strong way so that the user cannot repudiate or deny that they have in fact done something, for example, placed an order or changed an account value. So those are five aspects of security: authentication, authorization, encryption, data integrity, and auditing and non-repudiation. When I say that security is fine-grained, what I mean to say and what I mean to stress here is that it's up to you to determine which areas of security matter to you, which ones make sense or are required within your environment. For example, not every application needs every aspect of security. And further, each time that you add an aspect of security, there is cost associated with it. For example, if you go to Apache Foundation and download the Apache web server, you don't have to authenticate yourself. Now, if you FTP, you authenticate as anonymous, but you don't have to log in. As far as authorization, there is some degree of authorization, but the fact is you can download almost anything. You want last night's build or the tools, the source code, it's all there for you. Confidentiality. Apache is certainly the leader in open source software, and confidentiality is just the opposite of their mission. You don't need to, for example, use SSL to download Apache. Auditing and non-repudiation, certainly they keep track of downloads, but they don't really track who does the download. So if you want to download Apache today and tomorrow afternoon and the day after, Apache isn't going to send you an email saying, why are you downloading the software over and over again? The degree to which they keep track of auditing is so they can say that Apache is the most widely downloaded piece of software on the internet, that sort of thing, but not from a security point of view. So those four aspects, authentication, authorization, confidentiality, and auditing and non-repudiation, are really not critical when downloading Apache web server. But it is that fifth aspect of security that is vitally important to Apache's mission, and that is data integrity. Because when you download Apache web server, you should also download with it the hash or digest that you use to validate that what you are downloading really is Apache web server and has not been modified by some third party. Certainly if I download Apache to run on my personal PC, I don't so much care about that. But if as a consultant I download Apache to run on my customer's system, my reputation depends on that download, and so does Apache's. So when I do that download, I download the message digest as well and use it to verify the integrity of the download. In that environment, for me, it is absolutely critical. When we talk about there being a cost to each aspect of security, what I mean is that every time you turn on some aspect, authentication, authorization, confidentiality, encryption, or data integrity, there is cost associated with it. Now, what are those costs? That cost may be in terms of licensing, maybe purely in terms of complexity, or very often the cost is in throughput. Let me give you an example of the cost of security features. It's not an IT example, but it's from an IT company, so it's close. A company I used to do a lot of work for, their office based in Manhattan, is located near Grand Central Station. And since 9/11, security in office buildings in that area has become quite high. When you go to the office, you have to be identified on the pre-approved visitors list. You have to present a photo ID to the security desk, and they take a picture of you. If you're carrying a laptop bag or backpack, they used to hand search it, but today they have an X-ray machine. Then, once you have your photo ID and your bag has been screened, you have to walk over to the escalators. At the escalators, you have to swipe your badge, and there's a guard standing there to make sure that you actually do swipe. Then you go up to the mezzanine where the elevators are located, and on the 28th floor, the company shares offices, shares the floor with a law office. So you have to use a badge or keypad or be allowed into the office suite by the receptionist. All right, so relatively high security. On the other hand, if you want to use the restroom on the 28th floor, you have to get a key, either from the receptionist in our office or the receptionist at the law firm. Now, my question is, why, after all that security to get into the building, do they require a key for the men's and women's washrooms? Not only is it superfluous, it's not necessary, it's also expensive, because both the company I worked with and the law firm often entertain off-site employees, contractors, and guests. And I know, since I don't work out of that office on a regular basis, I have been known from time to time to leave the building with the washroom key in my pocket. Well, when that happens often enough, the law firm and the company I used to work for have to pay to get the building supervisor to create new keys. It takes time away from doing required building maintenance, and it costs in real dollars to both companies on the floor. Further, it inconveniences them because if all the keys are gone, no one can use the restroom. So the expense of having those keys made really isn't necessary. It doesn't make either the law firm offices or the offices of the company I work for any more secure, and in fact costs them money. It's an example of providing security in a place where it's not needed. So what I can tell you is that as a consultant, it's never good enough to have a customer say to me, make it more secure. Whenever a customer does that, I try very hard, and to be very diplomatic since they are customers, to say, what do you mean by more secure? What specific threats are you concerned about? And what sort of action should we take to mitigate them? So security is a multifaceted, fine-grain issue. Let's go ahead and take a look at two very important categories of security as relates to the service bus and web services and messaging in general. The two categories are transport-based security and message-based security. Transport-based security, as the name suggests, is dependent on the chosen transport. The example of transport-based security that we almost all use in the IT industry today is SSL. SSL uses public key encryption or asymmetric encryption to negotiate the exchange of a session key between two parties and then uses that session key for symmetric or bulk encryption. SSL provides three or four aspects of security. SSL provides strong authentication of the server. The server sends the client their certificate. Provides for encryption via the exchange of that session key, and also provides for data integrity. so as messages sent via SSL cannot be modified. SSL also provides a fourth aspect of security, and that is when we use two-way SSL, the client provides a certificate as well, and we can have strong authentication of the client. In a B2C, a business-to-consumer environment, we typically use only one-way SSL. For example, when I go access my bank, I know who my bank is because they send me, this is my browser, their digital certificate. I know that my data is encrypted, no one can read it, and I know that data integrity is ensured, so no one can modify it. Now, how does my bank know who I am? The answer is, in a cryptographically strong way, they don't. Because where I'm using strong authentication, using a certificate to authenticate the bank is using a weaker form of authentication, and that form is username, password, or account number and password. Why does the bank do that? They could make the system, quote, more secure. The answer is, if they required me to have a certificate, I'd probably choose a different bank. So transport-based security. A couple more thoughts about transport-based security. Transport-based security is sort of like sending a message via armored car. You want to send a message to another office, you call an armored car company, they send an armed guard to come up, take the message from you, they put it in the armored car, drive it to your destination, and drop it off with the recipient that you specified. They ask that recipient to identify themselves by presenting some sort of ID. However, those aspects of security that are supported here are only supported while the message is in transit. For example, let's say you want to send a message to your boss at the home office via armored car. The delivery company takes the message, puts it in an armored car, drives it to your home office, and then they go up and leave it with your boss's administrative assistant. The administrative assistant places the message on your boss's desk, and there it is, sitting in plain sight where anybody can read it, or pick it up or take it away. The security features only apply to the message while in transit. Another point about message-based security is that message-based security is an all-or-nothing proposition. What I mean by that is, those aspects of security are applied to the entire message. You can't just encrypt part of the message. For example, if you're sending a SOAP message that contains some sensitive information in the body, along with a couple of very large SOAP attachments, using SSL, both the message which needs to be encrypted and the attachments which don't get encrypted. The whole thing is encrypted, and that becomes very cumbersome. So an alternative to transport-based security is message-based security. Message-based security in Oracle Service Bus is based on a series of standards that are combined into the overall security standard called WS Security from OASIS. Message-based security uses a variety of XML security standards in order to provide security features to the message themselves. For example, in message-based security, the message itself is encrypted. So even if you send the message over an unsecure transport like FTP, it still retains the features of security that you have defined for it. So it's still encrypted, it still supports data integrity and authentication, for example. Further, message-based security is fine-grained. You can determine which parts of a message to encrypt or sign. So we might say we only want to encrypt the body of the message, leaving the headers and the attachments in plain text. So message-based security is a very flexible security standard and very important in web services. The Oracle Service Bus supports both transport-based security and message-based security. It can be a policy enforcement point for message-based security and can serve as both a passive intermediary and an active intermediary. What we mean by that is, as a passive intermediary, secure messages essentially pass through the service bus from the client to the back-end service. and the service bus doesn't decode them or handle the security features in any way. It just passes them through. The Oracle Service Bus can also be an active intermediary, so it can decrypt messages, and in the service bus you can operate on the decrypted messages. It can serve as a policy enforcement point, so clients must use, for example, WS security between the client and the service bus, and the service bus then takes the message and forwards it back to the back-end service. Another important aspect of security has to do with things like single sign-on and identity propagation, and the service bus supports that in a couple of different ways. The service bus supports a feature called service accounts. Service accounts are a form of credential mapping. For example, let's say that in order to access the service bus, I send a request as the user Joe, and my request goes to the service bus. The service bus examines my credentials and says, this is the user Joe. The service bus is going to send my request to some back-end service, and in the back-end service, I'm not the user Joe, I'm the user Joe Smith. So the service bus uses what's called a service account to map the Joe credentials to the Joe Smith credentials. So when my request that I sent as Joe gets passed to the back-end system, the credentials for Joe Smith, that's Joe Smith's username and password, are retrieved from the service account and passed to the back-end system. So in a credential map, one user, the user Joe in this case, was mapped to credentials for a different system. That way all the Joe requests get sent to the back-end system as Joe Smith requests, and the back-end system responds appropriately. That's one form of handling identity propagation by using service accounts, passing credentials to the appropriate system. Another framework supported by the Oracle Service Bus that is used typically for single sign-on is called SAML, or Security Assertion Markup Language. SAML is a very rich and complex framework. It does more than what I'm going to describe here, but the basic use of SAML is this. SAML relies on trust between parties. In SAML, you have an asserting party and a relying party. The asserting party makes an assertion, and based on trust, the relying party trusts the assertions made by the asserting party. For example, we could use the service bus, as an asserting party. Clients authenticate against the asserting party, so when a client makes a request to the bus authenticates the client. How's the bus going to do that? Well, it could be any number of ways, but let's say the client passes passes username and password credentials. So in the service bus, we identify the client and the client's identity. We verify the client's identity, and then when we pass the client's request on to the back-end service, the SAML asserting provider inserts in the request, in the SOAP headers, inserts what's called a SAML token. The token consists of an assertion, and in this case it's a very simple assertion. The assertion is that this is the user, Joe. The back-end system receives the request, views the assertion says this is the user Joe, and on the basis of that assertion, which is signed by the service bus or the asserting party, the back-end system accepts that this is indeed the user Joe and allows that user or that request Joe's privileges within the back-end system. So SAML is a system based on trust. The back-end system here didn't ask for Joe's username or password. It accepted the fact that the asserting party, or the service bus, had adequately authenticated Joe based on the token that was inserted into Joe's request. So an Oracle Service Bus supports transport-based security via SSL, message-based security via WS security. It can act as an active intermediary or a passive intermediary. It can use service accounts to map credentials from one system to another, and it can use SAML, or Security Assertion Markup Language, as a means of identity propagation in order to support single sign-on. So those are the key security features of the Oracle Service Bus. I hope you enjoyed today's presentation and look forward to your comments and questions. You can email me your input by using the question box found on this page, and I'll be answering your questions and replying to your comments in upcoming presentations. If you're interested in viewing my other shows, just search the GoGo Radio Archive for David Chung. If there is a show that you would like to see, please send me an email and let me know, and we'll see if we can go about recording it. Thank you for your time today, and remember to tune into GoGo Radio, found exclusively on GoGo.com.